Welcome to Ready for Change, the podcast dedicated to preparing and equipping you with the tools needed for changes within your industry. I'm your host, Mike Jarmus, and on this podcast, we'll be featuring special guests who are experts in business, retail, and finance. They will share their stories, wisdoms, and insights on changes occurring within their own industries. We'll cover other topics like market trends, technology, news, and innovation in various industries. Thanks for tuning in this week. Now let's get started. For the last 6 to 7 months, COVID-19 has changed how we live daily. Essentially, it's changed our priorities, disrupted most industries, and most importantly, forced us to reconsider how we interact with one another. In turn, this pandemic has spurred a rapid evolution in how we interact with others outside of our immediate circles. Similar to the view of Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, many global public health agencies are hoping this pandemic only lasts 2 years. Sir Mark Walport, a member of the UK's Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, has stated that COVID-19 is going to be with us forever in some form or another, similar to how we deal with the influenza virus. Vaccinations have also become a source of hope for millions of people who are looking to return to their normal lives. But even Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, has mentioned that we've got to think of the vaccine as a tool to be able to get this pandemic to no longer be a pandemic, but to be something that's well controlled. But unfortunately, as we all are waiting on a vaccine to reduce the global rates of infections, the aftermath of this ongoing pandemic has undoubtedly changed one essential activity for consumers, that being in-store shopping. Today, retail is evolving and will continue to for as long as the pandemic lasts. This evolution has had a profound impact on consumers. According to McKinsey, 60% of global consumers have moderated their shopping behaviors since March for convenience and value. Of those same consumers, they've also found that many are willing to continue these new shopping habits even after the pandemic ends. While the change in shopping behavior is one of the main variables prompting change in retail, several other factors contribute to permanent and semi-permanent change in the retail industry. These additional factors can be thought of as trends. The majority of these trends directly address retail changes, but others pertain to changes in consumer work habits, payment options, and even the impact of third-party delivery services. Keeping this in mind, it's crucial that retailers familiarize themselves with these major trends impacting the retail industry, especially since they are the result of COVID-19. More importantly, retailers need to understand how these trends will impact their businesses even after the pandemic. Understanding the effects of these trends, retailers can better evaluate how to better serve their customers and the communities they serve. For this episode, I've managed to sit down with some of Glory's own leadership and some other outside thought leaders and experts. These featured guests have an extensive retail background and can directly speak about the current emerging trends in retail. One of the first emerging trends is the idea of cashierless stores or shopping experiences. Because of consumers' increasing concerns about in-store cleanliness and hygiene, cashierless stores are now being mentioned more frequently during conversations about the future of safe in-store shopping. Before the pandemic, Amazon was one of the first retailers to create this experience with their Amazon Go stores. Now, retailers such as Aldi are evaluating placing AI solutions that enable a cashierless experience in their stores. Circle K here in the U.S. is also considering creating cashierless convenience stores, and Salisbury in the U.K. has used their Scan & Go app to deliver a similar experience. To further elaborate on cashierless experiences, Thibault Denol, the Director of Marketing and Innovation at Acrolec, join me to share a little bit about his cashierless experiences.
If I go back in the past and my history with cashierless shopping, I was first really impressed by Acrolec self-ordering kiosk when I was working at McDonald's. So the idea I've got on the burger bar we opened was to push the customer journey a step further and bring kiosk at the table. But I learned during this experience that it's not just about the customer journey. It's not just about cool technology. Being successful in retail is about efficiency, throughput, and the right technology solution for any retailer is all about increasing guest counts, increasing average check. So kiosk or mobile ordering in the food and beverage industries are perfect examples. Self-checkout and click and collect in groceries are also cashierless experiences that just come to my mind.
For most retailers, these stores are optimal because they remove the need for frontline employees to be present for payment acceptance or processing at the point of sale. However, the technologies used to create these stores are not optimized for all payment types. To elaborate further on this point, Joe Gnorski, Glory's VP in retail in the Americas, also spoke to me about how many cashierless stores do not account for cash-paying customers.
Cashierless and cashless, right? They're different things. So I think there are signs of hope in this space, to be honest. But first, you know, let's make the distinction between cashless and cashierless, because they're really not the same thing, right? A store can have cashiers and still be cashless and say, we're not going to accept cash, right? And they can also be cashierless, autonomous checkout, these other types of AI technologies that they're doing, but they could still offer cash payment potentially, right? And I think there's generally some confusion in the market because of the prominence of Amazon Go. It had such a large media splash, and it was such a big deal when it came out that they came out both cashierless and cashless. And so in a lot of ways, I think people, you know, in the media and elsewhere tend to pull those two things together. But in reality, you know, sort of Venn diagram, there would be some overlap there, but maybe not that much. I think, you know, there'd be a lot more that would fall into individual categories, but not necessarily together. But overall, you know, consumers are definitely find that the checkout process of shopping is one of the more frustrating experiences in retail, right? That's where friction exists for them as a consumer. And so it's not surprising that retail is going to start looking for cashierless kind of stores or things that are going to create less friction, right? The value proposition of these places, it's in the title, right? Amazon Go. You just walk in, take what you want, and go, right? And all of the electronic payment is going to take care of itself. So they're looking to reduce that, but they're not the first ones. There have been others. So Sweetgreen was a big restaurant that did this with a lot of splash, and they got a lot of pushback. Dry Bar, there's been a number of them that have come out and tried to sort of go either cashless or even push cashierless and then consequently not have cash. And I think what's interesting is that those have switched. So when I say that I think that there's hope in this space that these cashierless stores can adequately cater to the needs of a cash-paying customer, we're starting to see that, right? Amazon Go is now starting to offer cash payments, albeit it does create a little bit of friction on the front end for how they're doing it, but they are. Places like Sweetgreen and Dry Bar and other restaurants have gone from cashless to back to accepting cash. And I think that that's a really important thing because the market is ultimately driving that, right? It was the consumers that were saying we wanted this, and those cash consumers, it's good that they're the ones pushing customers back to that. That's the kind of feedback loop you want, you know, when you try something different in a market. You don't want it to be pushed down just because it's someone might perceive something as more efficient or as cost savings. You know, the consumer market really pushed back and said, we want this to be different. And those initial experiences are telling us that consumers want cash as a payment, and we're starting to see that.
He then pointed out the importance of these types of payments and how they could provide retailers with some form of contingency if their payment networks were to go down.
Well, it definitely provides an advantage in that environment, right? And that's not a hypothetical. Cash is incredibly resilient as a payment method. Not too long ago, Target had a nationwide outage of their cash registers. Now, not just like a power outage, right, where your store goes down, but a nationwide outage of the servers and all of the technology that was running their cash registers. They literally could not take transactions in their stores unless you were paying in cash. And so think about that at a small restaurant or back again to these low margin businesses and other places where they can't afford that. You know, so many businesses we're seeing with COVID now that the shift and the change of what's happening in our country for retailers and for that part of the economy has been really drastic. And just having these small periods of time where there's an extreme drop off in people coming into your store, people being able to buy from you in some way, it has massive long-term impacts on them as a business that, you know, many of them, even though they seem to be surviving today, may never be able to dig out of the hole that they're in because they just can't survive that long with negative cash flow. And so when you think about Target, right, as a major retailer, if it can happen to them, right, this could happen to anybody. And so having the option for cash and having multiple payment options, I think just makes a lot of sense because cash is always available. I mean, it works between two people standing on a corner exchanging money for something. Hopefully it's because, you know, you lost a bet or whatever with a buddy. You know, at the end of the day, it really is the payment method that doesn't discriminate in any way. On the power failure or network failure component is that electronic payments really do represent sort of a centralized point of failure, right? They are a single point of failure for an organization. If you put all your eggs in that basket electronically and choose not to take other payment methods, then when that central point of failure goes down, you have a huge problem. And that holds true for technical failures like system outages, but also for power failures. And that's an enormous risk. And companies shouldn't be looking to add risk to their business. They should be looking to diminish it. And having more options helps you to diminish that risk.
After speaking with Joe, I was joined by Zenon Green, the Global Director of Thought Leadership and Content at Glory Global Solutions, to discuss more about the concept of cashierless stores, and he provided an in-depth explanation on whether cashierless really implies cashless.
Well, let's be clear on what a cashierless store really is, what it actually is, because they range from the fully autonomous stores, such as Amazon Go, through the unattended environments where there's no staff present, and right the way through to those stores, which are much more familiar to most of us, the scan-as-you-shop stores, for example. The question is, what's driving this switch to cashierless stores? Cost, that's one reason. Convenience, that's certainly another. And removing those bottlenecks at the checkout is very important. But it should not be about removing consumer choice. And removing cash would be removing a consumer payment method choice. And many customers, they prefer, and some even need, to pay with cash. And why would any retailer choose or want to exclude these customers? Because I think the truth is, cash payments can in fact be easily made in a cashierless store. Cash payment station solutions, they're tried and they're proven and can be very effectively automated. And Glory, we do this today with deployments around the world. On the other hand, scan as you shop is, in essence, an extension of self-checkout. And the same cash automation technology can be used. And again, we have customers today who are doing exactly that around the world. So cashierless absolutely should not mean cashless. What is important, though, is to design in cash payment. Contactless cash payment needs to be designed into the cashierless shopping experience so that it feels a natural and simple part of the shopping journey.
Considering that these solutions would help these stores collect cash safely, he then commented on what these stores could do to manage their back office operations.
We have the solutions that enable consumers to use cash effectively and efficiently and physically distance. So this is the other side of that story, right? And indeed, we have these back office solutions in our Cash Infinity portfolio. And again, they're deployed globally. What do they do? Well, they automate many of those labor and time intensive processes in the back office. Things like counting cash drawers, reconciling cash, preparing change for cash drawers and so on. And not only is there an obvious time and efficiency gain here, but many of our customers have also told us that it is a positive impact on their cashiers as well, who are relieved of the stress and indeed the errors and miscounting of cash and preparation of cash. And these solutions also help to improve the efficiency of the funds collected. And typically, tasks related to cash retrieval and disposal can add up to 30 minutes for each checkout lane. So by deploying these solutions in the back office, retailers can drastically reduce this time. And secure cash recycling in the back office can also help reduce the number of bank visits and optimize cash in transit pickup processes. And where available, through participating banking partners. Provisional credit solutions are also made possible, which accelerates the time for consumer cash payments to hit the retailer's bank account. And in this respect, our back office solutions effectively enable retailers to have a kind of bank branch in their back office.
While my discussions with these gentlemen mainly covered how cashierless stores could cater to all their customers' needs, I found that these types of stores are quite expensive to actually build for most retailers. According to Forbes, the hardware alone for each Amazon Go store costs $1 million on average. Keep in mind, this doesn't account for many other costs like POS systems, remodeling fees, or other costs associated with staffing these stores. As it was mentioned earlier, retailers can provide a similar impact to cashierless stores by deploying contactless solutions for all payment types. The second major trend that we are covering in this episode is on the widespread adoption of e-commerce globally. Global e-commerce sales increased by 28% in June of this year compared to June of 2019. In fact, in the second quarter alone, e-commerce sales in the US totaled a little over $2 billion, while e-commerce sales in the UK are predicted to be over £222 billion by the end of the year. In China, revenue in the retail market is projected to reach a little over $2 billion by the end of this year. This large volume of e-commerce sales can be accredited to the fact that consumers are now limiting their exposure to high foot traffic areas. As a result, retailers are now starting to invest more in their online operations and presence. They've started to hire more people to complete online order fulfillment, and some have also outsourced their delivery services to third-party companies. Companies such as Tesco in the UK have already announced that they're planning to create 16,000 new permanent roles to support the growing online orders. Regarding the rapid adoption of e-commerce, Thibault provided his thoughts and insights.
It's difficult to know how much of it is here to stay, but based on my personal experience, I would believe that some of it is here for good. I was forced to enroll and download some applications, and now that I'm using them and I can see the benefit of using them with great loyalty programs and convenient curbside pickup options, I would believe that it will increase, and this increase in demand have shown the limits of the current implementation, and it shows how technology can help reduce wait times and lines for customers, how staff can work in more efficient ways, and your ROI beyond expanding shelves online and using parking as serviceable areas.
Interestingly, Thibault then talked about the increasing demand resulting from the recent events and how deploying collection management solutions can help retailers.
So the way curbside pickup is currently implemented is mostly through a mobile application and a static totem or signage with instruction to open the app and check in. Such systems show their limits when the usage and the demand arise. And when stores have to process more orders, more customers, there is a clear need for efficiency, especially with a click and collect becoming a new norm and everyone's doing it. Just providing a click and collect service is no longer a differentiator. Providing the best click and collect experience is a differentiator. It can take many forms, from a predictive arrival technology to parking bay recognition, location, seamless and contactless check-in for customers in their application or on a kiosk, and an order management system.
Even after our conversation, I was curious to learn more about some of the costs for retailers associated with pivoting to a larger amount of online operations. From my conversation with Joe Gnorski, we discussed the hidden costs for retailers and the impact on their businesses.
Retailers weren't pushing so hard and fast into the space, but now they've been forced to. And I've seen some great stories of really creative ways that retailers have pivoted their business into interesting different business models to try to survive during this time. Most of those involve online, right? Because we're in an environment where we're trying to remain somewhat contactless and distanced from each other. And so the online and e-commerce component of this represents a real opportunity for retailers to be able to do that. But think about what happens, you know, you can basically translate all the conversation around being on our phones all the time, texting all the time, doing all of this stuff electronically, and what that's meant for our ability to interact with others, right? And to develop strong relationships and to do all of those things. We hear those kinds of conversations happening about society in general. Well, that translates exactly into the store experience. When somebody comes into your store, you have an opportunity to create a relationship with them. You have an opportunity to make an impact on them. And you can do it online as well to a certain degree, but definitely, it's definitely not the same from that perspective, right? So when you start to, and are forced to, in this case, shift to e-commerce, you really do start to lose the opportunity for improving the customer experience, building loyalty around that. You know, I think about things that are happening for retailers right now, like this concept of dark stores, where some grocery stores and others, especially the large ones, they're starting to take actual typical grocery stores that you might go to as a consumer and basically shutting them down to consumers. They still have trucks coming in, they're still filling shelves, but the entire operation is just meant to be a delivery hub for online orders, right? They've completely shifted. Now, they're not doing this in every store, of course, but they've made those locations, you know, I order and then I drive to that store to pick it up. Their parking lot is restructured for basically a click and collect kind of environment. And they call the store dark because they don't let anybody in. It's basically become a warehouse. But think about from a business perspective, how much retailers go through in terms of the investment for shelf space, how to position things so that they're visible to the customer in a way that's appealing, how to do end caps at a grocery store or lay out apparel in a retail store in a way that's appealing, that makes you think, oh, I really like that and I want to buy that, right? Or I'm interested in trying that. Those kinds of things, there's a lot of science and a lot of money that goes into making those store experiences wonderful and for humans to have emotional reactions to them. It's really tough to get an emotional reaction when I'm sitting in my car and a stranger opens my trunk and puts my groceries in it, right? That's not, it might be an emotional reaction, but it's going to be a very different one than what the store is hoping for. So in a lot of ways, I think that's really where those intangible costs come through, right? That you're missing all of that. And of course, all the tangible costs really become the technology that's driving this, right? The click and collect systems, all of the other things that they may have to invest in. So I think what retailers really need to be thinking about is how do they bridge that gap? How do they start to dynamically merge those two concepts together to create a delightful experience that isn't just about efficiency and less friction, but actually makes you feel good about the fact that you ordered from them.
He then commented on how retailers pivoting to online would impact their cash-paying customers.
You know, online e-commerce has been around for a long time. It's become a dominant way of life. And, it was years ago now, I think, that e-commerce passed up traditional commerce in terms of total dollars in the U.S. market. So it is now the dominant way that things are purchased and bought across sort of all retailing. But when it comes to sort of the how to pay, right, and the cash component of this, I think about elsewhere in the world where infrastructure isn't as strong. So people don't necessarily have access to all of the things that are maybe a little more common here in the United States. So go down south, for example, into Mexico and into other Latin American countries. Cash is a dominant payment, right? There's vast majorities of economies down there do not have access to electronic payment whatsoever, but they still use Amazon. They still order things online. And so if you look at how they've tackled that problem, they've basically created, again, this comes back to sort of that innovation question. They've created kiosks and other payment points where you can basically queue up your order on Amazon that you wanted. And you say, I'm going to pay in cash, for example. And then, you know, you go to Oxxo or the 7-Eleven or, you know, a convenience store, and they'll have a kiosk in there where you log in on the screen and it queues up your order and you can pay cash into the kiosk. It validates your payment and then it releases your order for shipment, right? So they've created an outlet where people can do that because you can't necessarily tackle the broader economic issue of having such a huge portion of your population not have access to those other payment methods. And so I think, you know, over time, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there are definitely some new technologies out there that are enabling the ability for cash to become a payment method for and integrated into electronic commerce. And we're going to see a lot more of it in the future because cash is a really important option that we need to make sure stays in the economy for all consumers.
The next major trend that has affected retail is the changing of workplaces. As a result of the pandemic, millions of individuals are now working from home either part-time or full-time. 66% of U.S. employees are working remotely, and 46.6% of UK-employed individuals have worked or completed some work from home as a result of COVID-19. In Singapore, this figure is significantly larger. According to Bloomberg, over 80% of Singapore's workforce has worked from home since the safety measures were implemented. In light of these figures, many organizations are starting to rethink how they structure their in-office and work-from-home policies, as well as made adjustments to their standard business work week. These changes have greatly impacted the grocers, restaurants, and cafes that usually serve these workers during the work week, and in turn force them to reevaluate their operations. Being that these organizations are normally located in central business districts, many of their customers are no longer in close proximity, nor comfortable going in to order or pick up their regular lunch orders. Now many of these employees are either getting their lunches delivered or making their lunches at home. This also means that these individuals are taking more trips to the local grocery and convenience stores throughout the week. According to Mintel, UK convenience store sales are projected to grow by nearly 8% in 2020 compared to just 3% in 2019. According to Epsilon's consumer sentiment survey, 32% of Americans stated that they purchased their groceries at a convenience store or gas station in a two-week time period. Also, Kantar revealed in April that UK convenience stores experienced a 45% increase in sales within 4 weeks. Since the pandemic, consumers have started gravitating towards convenience stores mainly because of local source produce, low prices, and convenient locations closer to home. Other than those benefits, consumers are also visiting convenience stores to purchase pantry items for their homes. According to Nielsen's, consumers will go to C-stores to buy things such as dish soap and eggs. These items are starting to generate more robust sales because consumers are spending more time at home. This is favorable circumstances for many convenience stores because they are now becoming the go-to destination for goods in the communities they serve. The fourth and final major trend impacting retail is the rise of cash usage globally. In the US, it was reported that cash usage rose by 15%, while in Europe, this number rose by 12%. Even in the US, the current coin shortage is evident that consumers' preferable payment choice is still cash. In July, 1.8 billion pounds of currency was deposited throughout post offices in the UK, a 27% increase from the previous month. Across the world in China, the money supply came in at above 60 trillion yuan at the end of August, an 8% increase from last year. Much of this increase in cash usage can be credited to the increasing concerns about financial and job security. Consumers are using cash as a tool for financial security, budgeting, and managing their finances. In the previous episode, we stated consumers that are more cash-strapped typically become more budget-focused. Earlier in this episode, though, we discussed consumers shopping at more C-stores for value and convenience during the pandemic. These stores offer consumers multiple payment options to suit all their customers' needs and preferences, including cash. Considering that cash is accepted at these stores, it's equally important that it is being accepted safely. However, as you have either experienced or seen in the news, some retailers still are only choosing to accept card or contactless payment options. Unfortunately, these payment methods are only available to a select group of consumers, and the fees required to process these payments can be quite expensive for retailers. In fact, in an article from the Credit Protection Association, a number of small businesses have complained that the pressures to install and maintain cashless technologies are eroding their profit margins. Also, NRF conducted a study that revealed that 67% of retailers were concerned about the cost of contactless payments, including fees for processing transactions. Card payments have been thought to be quite expensive as well. According to Motley Fool, the average credit card processing fee can range from 1.3 to 3.4% with an additional fee from the payment processor. Though many of these fees are high, other contactless payment solutions can help reduce these costs. Also, in the previous episode, we discussed how cash could be accepted safely with contactless cash solutions. These solutions help reduce transaction fees and help to maintain social distancing at the checkouts. To further explain how contactless cash payments can reduce these fees, Zen and Greed provided some additional insights.
So the thing about cash is that it doesn't incur fees, and I would suggest that cash is the only universally available and accessible payment method, fee-free for everyone to give and accept. And when it comes to fees, well, I would say, you know, fee-free is probably pretty good, right? But as many will point out, cash does carry costs, and we know where these costs are typically incurred. Time, well, that's certainly one of them, of course, counting payments, cashing up, preparing floats, the cash drawer, preparing deposits for banking and so on. Every one of these manual tasks can be effectively removed with cash automation, and our Cash Infinity solutions, they do exactly that. We also know that another cost of cash is transporting it back and forth between banks, between retailers and cash centers and so on. Deloitte, they published some research recently which suggested that this amounts to just under about a third of all costs associated with cash. And this, again, is a cost that automation can effectively address with efficient recycling. And that leads me to the last point I'll make here. As opposed to incurring fees for retailers, cash can actually also generate revenue with cashback and other localized cash dispensing methods and models being deployed, all of which, of course, will greatly benefit from cash automation.
Besides helping reduce fees, Zenon also commented on the array of benefits that contactless cash options provide for retailers.
When the risks which are associated with the coronavirus pandemic finally diminish, the benefits of cash automation, they're going to endure. We've looked at many of these already. So things like physical distancing. Honestly, I think an increased desire and awareness around this will continue amongst consumers. Or the improvements in queue management, reducing employee time, counting, reconciling, preparing cash in the front and back office, of course, which we've talked about. But another, and I'd say an equally great benefit of deploying cash automation technology is the improvement of the customer journey. And the impact of the pandemic, I believe, has drastically changed consumers' expectations for their in-store shopping experiences and removing points of friction. By their very nature, retail experiences are never completely frictionless. But with Glory Solutions payments, and I mean cash payments, can be fast, they can be efficient, secure, and error-free for both staff and customers alike.
As you've just heard, deploying contactless cash solutions can be an invaluable, worthwhile solution that is also key for business growth. The benefits alone make it stand out from the typical hand-to-hand cash transactions. In the current state of the world, change is inevitable and has become a permanent part of everyday life. My hope is, for this episode, that it does inspire you to evaluate how these changes or trends will impact your business's operations in the next couple of months. As it was mentioned earlier, the need for safer in-store shopping experiences directly connect to the financial, emotional, and cultural changes across multiple societies. For this reason, consumers now are more selective over where and how they choose to shop, and it has prompted several retailers to transform their customer journeys overnight. However, this idea of changing rapidly can be quite expensive and perilous if not done properly. Instead of reacting immediately to the latest trends, take the time to reflect on them. It could be quite beneficial for your business. Lately, there have been numerous retailers and small businesses that have faced backlash for reacting too quickly. The issue with making abrupt changes in this manner is that it does not provide the time to fully evaluate how those changes impact every facet of your business. Simply put, being reactionary does not always provide immediate rewards and can end up costing more in the long run. Familiarizing yourself with the latest trends, including the ones mentioned in this episode, equips you to create more opportunities by strengthening your vision and building long-term success. So please take the time to explore alternative solutions and methods to help your business adequately serve every type of customer that may enter your store. Thank you for listening to Ready for Change. If you like what you heard, please leave us a positive review and share this episode with a colleague or friend. And be sure to subscribe to Ready for Change on www.glory-global.com/ready-for-change, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts and other major podcast channels in order for you to never miss an upcoming episode. If you have any additional questions or suggestions, be sure to email us at readyforchange@glory-global.com. Until next time, prepare for change.